Good evening, dear friends. Every gathering of people, especially every gathering of Baha'is, has a spirit which animates its proceedings. In many ways, the animating spirit of this International Youth Conference is the manner in which the Baha'i youth in Iran have responded to the challenges put before them. Since the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the condition of the Baha'i community has been that of complete oppression. The Baha'i community of Iran has been denied all its human rights. It has lost its most precious members, many of whom have been killed, hundreds of whom are in prison, thousands and thousands who have lost all their jobs, livelihoods, and belongings, hundreds and hundreds who have become refugees outside of their lands, and thousands who are refugees within their own homeland. This drama is not yet completely finished, nor is extent of hardship and adversity is really known by the Baha'is, let alone the non-Baha'i community in the world. However, this story is not a new story for the Baha'is of Iran. This is a story that began in 1844 and it has continued to this day. But this time, a new dimension or several new dimensions have been added to the atrocities that are experienced by the Baha'is in Iran. Yes, in the course of the Baha'i history, since 1844, some 24,000 individuals have been martyred. But many of them, most of them, were men. But this time, women have been in the forefront in their martyrdom, in their defense of the faith. When we speak of martyrdom, one should realize that the Baha'is are not kind of fanatical group who seek martyrdom. Baha'is have been told by Baha'u'llah that their main objective in life is to serve humanity, to be the cause of oneness of mankind, the progress of civilization, the establishment of the universal peace. These are the objectives for which Baha'is live. But you see, any time that humanity or an individual is faced with a challenge, then there should be willingness to sacrifice in such manner that is equivalent to that challenge, equals that challenge. Today in the world, we have a very unusual circumstances. Masses of humanity are in a state of poverty, disease, and oppression. The leaders of mankind have began to view humanity, to view mankind, as nothing more than animals. The books that you read, the theories that are espoused, the ideas that are given to us, all of them invite us to accept that we are animals who are governed by the laws of competition, of self-interest, of greed, of materialism, of wanting and wanting and wanting. This is the prevailing concept that is everywhere in the world today. In the midst of this condition comes Baha'u'llah, who says, no, man is not an animal. The human beings are created noble beings. And this nobility has to come to fruition. So when you want to establish nobility, when you want to establish that humanity is basically peaceful and loving and not aggressive and full of hate, when you want to do that, then you have to be willing to stand behind those principles. From a Baha'i perspective, the messenger of God for today, the manifestation of God for today, the message of God for humanity today is that mankind finally has reached to that level that should accept the responsibility to showing forth its own nobility. Therefore, when the Baha'is are confronted by injustice, are confronted by tremendous atrocities that are put upon them in the lands of the birth of the faith, they do not respond with aggression, they do not respond with violence, they do not respond with subversion, but rather they respond with an eloquence of logic, of reasoning, of a conduct, of a behavior, of a mode of interaction that would show to those who are acting as they are that indeed you can see the signs of nobility of a human being at all levels, under all conditions. And if proving that nobility requires that you give your life, you will give your life, because once and for all mankind has to accept its high destiny. So the martyrdom of the Baha'i is the martyrdom for the cause of the glorification of human race. And this is the session that is dedicated to this point. The chairperson of this conference, this session of the conference, is Carmel Hatcher.
Ruhia Jahanpour was born in Shiraz. She received her degree in chemistry at the University of Shiraz. She was sent to prison on two occasions, in 1982 for a period of 19 days.
Chairperson of this conference, this session of the conference, is Carmel Hatcher. And this is the session that is dedicated to this point. The chairperson of this conference, this session of the conference, is Carmel Hatcher.
Ruhia Jahanpour was born in Shiraz. She received her degree in chemistry at the University of Shiraz. She was sent to prison on two occasions, first in February 1982 for a period of 19 days, secondly in November 1982 for 2 months. The second time she was imprisoned with 10 Baha'i women who were consequently put to death. 3 months earlier, another Baha'i woman had been executed. Herself, during these two imprisonments, had been tortured. Today she lives in Canada with her mother and her sister. Let's welcome Ruhia Jahanpour.
I would like to start by offering my sincere thanks to the International Youth Conference for giving me this opportunity to share some of my memories of our beloved young martyrs of Iran, some of those who were imprisoned with me in Shiraz, and whose friendship was a great privilege to this unfortunate soul. Although I feel inadequate to recount their acts of faithfulness, it is a very special honor for me to speak of them in this momentous gathering. I would like to begin by reading the passage of Baha'u'llah from the Hidden Words. Since each and every of these martyrs was a shining example of it. O Son of Justice, whither can a lover go but to the land of his beloved? And what seeker findeth rest away from his heart's desire? To the true lover, reunion is life and separation is death. His breast is void of patience, and his heart hath no peace. A myriad lives he would forsake to hasten to the abode of his beloved. Since this is a youth conference, I want to tell you about the young lovers of the city of Shiraz. I will try my best to tell you of their self-sacrifices, their self-effacement, and even of the last beats of their pure hearts as they walk the path of martyrdom. I will start by telling you about the youngest and loveliest martyr of Iran, Mona Mahmoud Nejad, that she was only 16 years old and still a high school student. Because she was a Baha'i, they prevented her from attending school, unaware of the fact that they were really entering her into the school of the love of Baha. Sparks of love within her soon turned into the flaming fire that led her singing and smiling to the field of martyrdom. My first memory of Mona, on which indicates her love for serving the faith, goes back to when she was 14. While I was serving on the Baha'i Committee Education of Shiraz, We received a request from Mona to serve on one of our subcommittees. Since she had not reached the legal age to be enrolled as a Baha'i, her request was turned down due to a specific instruction of the Assembly of Shiraz. When she was informed of the decision, she burst into tears and cried bitterly. But later, when she turned 15 and enrolled, she applied again. This time, she was immediately accepted and assigned to a committee. It was only a few months later that Mona and her father were arrested in their house by a group of Revolutionary Guards who searched their house and confiscated all the Baha'i pictures and books they could find. That night, Mona was the first of several Baha'i women who were brought to jail. Later, when she related the events of that night, she said, "My mother was very anxious and troubled about her arrest and asked one of the guards, 'Why are you taking my 16-year-old daughter?' And he said, 'What a silly question, because she will soon be a great promoter of the Baha'i faith.' Then she told me, in contrast to my mother, my father was very calm. Just before we left, he held my hand and pointed to the guard, saying to my mother, 'Don't worry, these are my sons and Mona's brother.' Then we said goodbye and were taken to the prison. Mona was very beautiful and had a lovely voice. She used to chant the prayers and writings in a moving way. Even the Islamic judge at her trial had heard about her voice and asked her to chant something for him in the trial. Mona replied, 'I can't do it in this way.' The judge asked her, 'Why? What do you mean?' And Mona pointed out, 'You would have to sit respectfully with your hands folded on your chest before I could read anything.' At first the judge refused, but after a while, as though spellbound by her spiritual character, he complied with her wish. When Mona had finished reciting a short prayer in a simple voice, the puzzled judge asked her, 'Why did you not sing it?' Mona replied, 'I only chant for my heart and when I am alone, not in front of you.'" Mona had a truly pure heart. A few months before her arrest, she had an amazing dream that she shared with me when we were in prison. When she talked about the dream, she became very excited, as though she were experiencing it again. And this is her dream. She saw herself in a room decorated all in blue, and suddenly Baha'u'llah himself entered the room and took some boxes out of a dresser, saying, "Mona, we know which one of these you will choose, but we want to hear from your own mouth." Of course, he went on, "We have also made a selection for you." Then he opened the first box and took a very beautiful decorated red case of the box and put it on Mona with his blessed hand and buttoned it and asked Mona, "Do you like it?" Mona asked, "It is beautiful, but what is the meaning of this?" Baha'u'llah said, "This is a robe of martyrdom." Mona said, "It is beautiful, but I don't like martyrdom. and I don't wish to be a martyr. Baha'u'llah, the Kitab Munah,